Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with composer Jennifer Higdon in advance of the East Coast premiere of her first opera, Cold Mountain. The opera had premiered in August in Santa Fe. I asked her about the differences between the production there and the upcoming production by Opera Philadelphia.
We have a couple of people who are actually different. Our Ruby is different. We now have Cecilia Hall, and we have a different Lucinda. And part of this has to do with the fact that there were conflicts in the schedules of the singers who were booked out in Santa Fe and were already obligated to another opera company during the time of the Philadelphia run. So there are some adjustments there, but I also was aware of the fact that there'll be, in effect, more power inside the Academy of Music because we're not outdoors. So the music isn't floating out. We aren't battling the wind, rain. So there are extraneous highway sounds, you know, that you would get out in Santa Fe. So we kind of have the luxury of having more controlled sound here.
When we talked before, you hadn't seen it, and you talked about how it was all in your head, and you really wouldn't know how everything worked together until you saw it on stage.
Right.
So now that you've seen it on stage, are you approaching this next performance in a different way?
Yes, actually, you know, for me, it's about taking care of the music because I realize the people who put the set, the costumes, the makeup, the lighting, the projections, they're all experts at what they do. So I let them do, even though what I'm seeing is somewhat different from what I saw in my head. I had to have an image in my head so I could figure out how to write the music, how long it would take a particular character to maybe cross the stage or to move in a different way. So what has happened is I am focused so much on the music, making sure everything is okay, that I'm not really thinking too much about what I'm seeing. The set is different than what I had in my head, but it is kind of a fascinating set to see. It's very radical. It's very, very radical. But it's nice that they figured out a way to make the scenes change as quickly as I was doing it in the music. That's a real challenge sometimes because I had the music moving at quite a clip. There's not a lot of stationary time in this opera.
Can you explain what you mean by radical?
Yeah, it looks like a modern sculpture. It looks like something to me like a bomb fell down into a timber yard and then the boards exploded upwards. So I think that the director, Lenny Folia, had said that when he was speaking with Robert Brill about what the design, he said he wanted a piece of sculpture that might be able to fit in the Whitney in New York. So he was looking for something that was very artistic, despite the fact that really the story is it's 150 years old. So Charles Frazier wrote it, you know, not that long ago, but it is encompassing the end of the Civil War, so it's a different era. But there are distinct challenges when a composer writes music that moves quickly from one scene to the next. So something might be unfolding on the left side of the stage while it's finishing up on the right side. But that way you keep the action moving.
Well, now you mentioned the book. The Free Library of Philadelphia has chosen Cold Mountain as the book for all Philadelphians to read this year.
Yeah.
And I wondered what you think about that, because you have this book that is extremely popular. It was extremely popular. It won a National Book Award. And then you had a film. So you have a story that people think they know.
Right.
How does that affect your job?
That's a good question, because I know when you sit down and read a book, you would take different things. Each individual would take different things. And I've read the book through 5 times now, so I'm sure my perception is different. I think this opera, you don't have to have read the book. I don't think you have to have seen the movie even. I think it's possible that you can take in the opera just seeing the opera. If this was the first time you were coming to the story, but certainly if you've read the book, there's going to be kind of an enriched experience there. Charles Frazier has a lot that happens in that novel. It is really a massive series of events. It's kind of incredible. I realized if I set the entire novel, it would be 3 nights to do the opera. It would be the ring cycle, maybe the Appalachian ring cycle. But then in reality, we had to pull out just what we considered key moments. And that was a little tricky. Gene Shearer, the librettist, and I sat down and actually, ironically, at 10th and Chestnut in a Starbucks, we sat down and pulled out the scenes we thought might kind of move the story along to keep it interesting. And incredibly, they worked once we heard it with the music.
Well, I was thinking about what your approach might be, because when we talked about your approach to orchestral works, we talked about how you always put something of yourself into it. And I would think that this opera is not just setting to music someone else's story. It's kind of your experience of this story.
That's true. It is my experience. And I think that may be even more so than the norm for writing an opera, because I grew up in this part of the country where the Smoky Mountains there. I was on one side, Coal Mountain is on the other. So this feels more personal than any other piece I think I've ever written. And so I have a real emotional investment in it. It's the soundtrack kind of my childhood. So there's a bluegrass element and the flavoring of it. And the people, all the characters, these are all people that I've known in East Tennessee, because literally the farm I lived on is very close to Coal Mountain. So it's personal, and then I'm handling someone else's characters. Charles Frazier made this story. He developed these characters. The real Inman was a member of his family. They didn't know that much about him, but there are pieces of his history actually in this. So for me, though, it feels very personal because I know the region of the country. I know the speech patterns, kind of the rhythm, the personalities. They're very familiar for me.
So I was going to ask you about your process, because you have a story, and then you said you sat down with the librettist and you figured out perhaps the highlights that would move the story forward. And then the music, it sounds as if you approached from a character point of view.
So, right. Right. It's an interesting, before I started writing the music, I kept a couple of notebooks. And the notebooks, they're just like the kind of notebooks you buy, you sketch, artists sketch in, they're blank pages. I made notes to myself about each of the characters that I thought were going to be in the opera, what their personalities are like. Would there be certain sounds that might accompany these characters? For instance, Teague is a very nasty man in this opera, and he's creepy. He's just absolutely creepy. So I made the decision early on that I wanted always to have some sort of snake sound, like a rattlesnake. Whenever he's on the stage, I wanted the percussion to be playing something that sounded like a rattle, a little bit like a rattlesnake, you know, kind of warning you that danger was coming. I thought about the fact that we have Inman, who is a soldier who's been hollowed out. So I gave him a lot of brass orchestrations, trombones, horns. But I also, when I was creating the chords, the harmonies that would fit Inman, I actually took out the middle of the chord, the very heart of a chord that tells you whether it's major or minor, because he feels hollowed out. I decided to make the harmonies hollowed out. And then I thought, Ada, at the beginning of the opera, she's a lot more, I guess, say, delicate. She wasn't raised to survive, which is kind of her journey in this, is to figure out how to survive when she's lost everything. Her father, she doesn't know how to farm. She doesn't even know how to cook. And so her personality kind of grows, becomes stronger as it goes through the opera. She becomes more and more of a presence. She's not much of a presence at the beginning. She's there, but she doesn't make as much of an impression. Ruby, who comes in to rescue Ada, she's a go-getter. She makes lists. She knows how to survive. She knows what she needs to do. So her music tends to move at a much faster clip. She's always making lists. And so I've got kind of a Ruby energy. She moves restlessly from one task to the next. So I kept a lot of notebooks. And once Gene and I actually figured out the scenes that we were going to use, I realized that opera is more interesting if you have a real variety in textures, whether you have an aria or five people singing or a full chorus. I kind of plotted out a map of when we could use a full chorus, when we might have a duet, when the two characters who are apart through most of the opera, Ada and Inman, because it's the journey of them getting back together, but we had to have flashbacks so you at least had a chance to see what their relationship was like before the opera. So trying to figure out the logistics, I had huge sketch pads. I'm making these boxes. I'm like, okay, we're going to have this happen in the first scene, and in the third scene I want to have maybe the chorus in there. So I kind of plotted it out musically, and fortunately it fit with the way we pulled out the scenes. So you're assembling a lot of information and trying to figure out psychologically how to create, I guess it's a sound world around each character. And how do these sound worlds meet? They're two different characters in one scene together. So it took a lot of work. I really had to think this stuff through. And it's very different than writing instrumental music. I was surprised at how different it was.
Wow. Well, there's so many other factors that you're considering. And the thing about opera, the plot gives you a framework,
right,
but the music is so integral to the storytelling.
Right.
As opposed to a soundtrack with a movie where you may or may not need that kind of...
So the music is interactive in opera and it's accompanying in film. That's the difference. And so you must actually make sure you are writing the music in a way that is musically interesting, so that if you were listening to this on a CD without looking at the set, it still speaks to you. You can still follow the story, and it has to be engaging. So it's like you're trying to carry along the story that Charles Frazier has created, but you're also trying to carry along the dramatic unfolding of the music. the two have to be married. And it's a really, really tricky thing. So you really have to think about, I mean, even simple things that I had never thought about. Like, it was obvious when we were going to have a flashback, one of the characters had to have a costume change. So I had to call Lenny Foley, the director, and say, how much time, how much music do I have to write? It has to sound logical. It can't just be music that's there for the costume change. And so he would think about it. We would literally sit on the phone while he thought about it. He says, I need 2 minutes. And I said, how are you going to change costumes in 2 minutes? He said, Velcro. It's so valuable. So I literally would ask him questions about, you know, if we're changing the scene, how much time do you have for a character to cross the stage, if they have to walk off, if they have to go around to the other side? They would give me the specific number of seconds. Sometimes it was 70 seconds. Sometimes it was 90. Sometimes it was 2 minutes. So I would have to craft music that sounded very logical, the right amount of phrasing and such, to fill in that space. And it had to make sense for the story. It couldn't just be music pasted in for the sake of pasting in. So these are the kinds of things you don't encounter when you're writing a violin concerto.
Where you don't have as many parameters, it can go where you want it to go.
Right, right.
So literature is one way of telling a story. And opera is a different way of telling the same story. What does music tap into in your mind? How does music tell the story in a different way?
Wow, that's a good question. Music, I guess for me, it brings up emotion. So in scenes where there is great violence or someone is dying, I guess everyone probably, if they're reading a book, would hear that differently in their head. With music, you can really draw a sonic image. If you have someone dying, it can be poignant or it can be extremely violent. The music would be completely different. At one point, there's a huge gun battle towards the end of the opera. And I remember thinking as I was writing it, I felt a little nauseous writing it because I realized I was going to have to kill quite a few people in this scene, and I felt responsible for it. But I also was aware that the music had to be the most violent music I had ever written. And so that kind of pushed me to think, all right, how do I do that with an orchestra? And I knew it had to be 1 minute and 15 seconds, which doesn't sound like it's inspired, because most people like to think of a composer as being inspired and the music just comes to you and you write it and then everything fits in that way. But the reality is you have to actually make all of this happen within a certain time frame. And so thinking about, you know, what is a violent fight? What is a gentle death? What is someone seeing a person they love that they don't recognize after 4 years of separation? What would that sound like in the music? Is it tender? Is it tentative? I spent more time asking myself questions like, what do I want the audience to take away from this? How do I want them to feel? And how do I put that in the music? Because they're not saying the words. So some of it, I can actually just create a swell of emotion in some way, or I can make it sound scary by putting very terrifying sounds in the orchestra. So I have to ask myself a lot of questions when I'm writing. I mean, how do I capture this sonically? And it's tricky. And you never know. I think you write it, but you don't know until you've actually seen it on the stage. And that's the thing that's exciting about it. But at the same time, I'm still thinking, all right, I'm juggling all of these balls. They have to fit in a logical order. If they don't fit in a logical order, it won't be very interesting for the audience. So you've got your brain working on a couple of different streams. Honor the characters, honor the story. What is the emotion for the story overall, the dramatic unfolding, what makes it interesting, but also what makes each character sound different, like they've got a different journey that they're going on. And how does that journey sound different from the very start of the opera to the very end of the opera?
You talked about thinking about what you wanted your audience to take away. This story has so many different emotions in it.
It is
a love story, but it is in a setting that just causes a lot of anguish,
yeah,
and horror.
Yeah. Perfect for opera.
Yeah. So what is your hope that putting this in the form of an opera with this music, what kind of experience will it be for people?
What is the impact, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? There are a couple of things that in my head I was thinking. I hope people take away the message of the power of love, which I think most people know anyway. But it's a real reminder. Inman is walking. He walks from Richmond all the way back to the western edge of North Carolina. And it's love. And it's also the wondering if he's damaged because he's seen so much killing, the realization that this actually wasn't his war. The area of Coal Mountain really didn't have slaves, so he realized he's been fighting another man's war, but he wants to get back to his love. So there's the importance of that. Also, just personal growth, how we all change in a lifetime. Ada really changes in this opera. She's not able to take care of herself at the beginning. She is by the end. Ruby doesn't trust anyone because her father basically abandoned her when she was born. She had to learn to survive in the forest on her own. And so she learns to trust. She learns to trust Ada. Ada learns that she needs Ruby. They learn to have this farm really survive a really brutal time in our country's history. And Ruby learns to trust to the point where she finds someone she can love. She falls in love during the opera. And Inman learns that he is lovable even after the war. But there's a real strong message that war, it's just harsh. There's just no good aspect to war. There's no upside.
Wow. Thanks so much, Jennifer Hinton.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.